the Board of Trustees of Chicago State University. Would you call the roll, please?
Trustee Hill.
Present.
Trustee Kerr.
Present.
Trustee Scott.
Here.
Trustee Rozier.
Present.
Trustee Lisa Morrison-Butler.
Present.
Trustee Samuels.
I'm here.
Is anybody not here?
It's Her Majesty.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Was the meeting notice posted as required?
Yes, it was.
Thank you. The first action item is approval of the previous meeting minutes. Is there a motion?
Move that we approve it.
Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Hill.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Rozier.
Yes.
Trustee Kerr.
Yes.
Trustee Morrison-Butler.
Yes.
Trustee Samuels.
Yes.
The next item on our agenda is the President's Report. Dr. Watson.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Yesterday, we had an event where the Vice President of the HLC came to visit. It's a culminating event of about probably 10 to 11 months. And I must commend our provost, our two chairs, Paul Musial and Professor Moop. Thank you. They provided leadership and getting us through the focus visit. We received a letter in late August, and that letter in late August reaffirmed our accreditation. And the letter in late August not only reaffirmed our accreditation, but also dispelled some of the misinformation that was in the press in mid-September with regards to our university's accreditation. So I want to give credit to that team. Next thing I want to bring attention to is the aquaponics. Under the leadership of Professor Floyd Banks in the biology department, we have pulled together an aquaponics program that has a hydroponics program that where we are utilizing it as part of our curricula. Our students are doing research, and our students are also using it as part of a learning experience. This has now grown to what is phase one, and we're now looking at phase two, where we're going to actually start an urban garden, but it's much, much more than that. We're going to take a couple of acres on the east side of the metro tracks, and we're going to do something with those acreage, and our students will be involved, and once again, it will be a learning process, and it will help us to address the food desert that does exist on the south side of Chicago. Next one is Egypt. Professor Beatty, our faculty member in the African American Studies Department, which I must state, he is, his reputation is Egyptologist throughout the United States, and he has taken approximately 20 students to Egypt, along with 3 to 4 other universities. And our students not only had a very healthy learning experience, but they also provided teachable moments for the students who were at the other three, from the other three universities. Our students excelled. Next one is, I'd like to introduce two individuals to you. One is Dr. Yvonne Harris. Dr. Yvonne Harris just recently joined us, and she is over sponsored programs, bringing in federal and foundation grants. I never know what her title is. I cannot state it. Can you please state what your title and what your degree is in? University of Illinois and University of Chicago. She's working close with our biology department, and they are trying to get their hands on her to teach. We want her to stay right where she is and develop and continue to write some proposals for us. We will eventually let her, you know, get her out there to teach and do research with the students, which is really her love. She loves that also. Thank you very much and welcome aboard. Next one I would like to introduce is Jason Ferguson. Jason, would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, the provost would like to highlight it.
Because I was a student.
Oh.
In my public health training, I was trained in public health emergency preparedness, emergency response, and I'm a certified instructor in the NIMS course. It's called Incident Command System.
So.
And Madam Provost, along with some of our Chicago State University staff were in the course, the two courses that I taught that particular quarter. And I continue to commend the provost for being the first provost that I've ever seen in an emergency.
To pass.
I thought he was going to say just to take it, but pass. That's
what.
Take it and pass.
What is important to note is that this is the teacher of the teacher throughout the state. In other words, he provides instruction in this area that a number of individuals are going through training for Homeland Security, NIMS, and et cetera. And he's one of the teachers throughout the state of Illinois. So we're blessed to have him because of his extensive knowledge in student activities, and he's hit the ground running, but also because of his extensive knowledge in that area. And Chief Watson just like celebrated when he heard that we were getting Jason on board here. So welcome aboard, Jason. The last two things I'd like to touch on is that we just opened up two labs, and the two labs that we opened were biology labs. They are state-of-the-art biology labs. I don't see Dr. Floyd Banks here, but I do see my dean. Dean, could you just very briefly tell what these labs mean to the university?
I don't know if you all had the opportunity to go to the science building. When this campus was developed, having students in laboratories doing research was not considered the most appropriate way to develop scientists. Over the years, it has evolved to be the case. So having students be able to be trained in state-of-the-art labs when they are freshmen and sophomores and then segue into research labs is what you want them to have. The other thing is that the way we teach science, the best practices have changed over the years, and the existing laboratories did not at all reflect that best practice. The two new labs, one is for microbiology and the other will also be used for introductory biology and some other courses as well, are state of the art. And the faculty have researched what the best practices are in instruction, and these labs are absolutely fantastic. They show what we can potentially do in science at Chicago State on a small scale. Fortunately, the president saw this as a priority, and we will have more labs coming that will be renovated. As a matter of fact, there's a meeting coming next week to discuss the next state-of-the-art laboratories, which will be in chemistry. And then there will be another lab in nursing that will be renovated. We are so excited about this. They have the technology, thanks to C. Cole Dillon, who presented us with the options that we could have in terms of technology. They provide opportunities for students to work in groups, which is extremely critical. But more importantly, they say to the students, with the investment in this renovation, that we are serious about doing science, we are serious about their education in science, we see this as a priority, and everybody is extremely excited. Dr. Banks, Dr. Juanita Sharp, the administrative assistant in biological sciences, as well as the people from physical plant, all came together to make this happen. And so we are extremely pleased. Periodically, Dr. Watson would walk through and then test me that day to see if I knew what was happening with the labs. But it's been a wonderful process. And one visit, we went through, and I said, you know, these are great. It's too bad we have to come through this cruddy corridor to get to these wonderful labs. They are now painted. The ceiling tiles in the corridor have been replaced. Cabinets that are in there for storage have been painted. I hope that you all can come by. If you cannot come to the opening next Friday, when you leave, it's still a little rough, but you can see what the transition is like. And if you go just next door to a couple of the other labs, you see what that transition has been like. It is state of the art, and we are most pleased. And thank you, Dr. Watson, for shifting funding for this project, because science is extremely important, as you know, and we've had conversations. I've been talking to people during the day about other kinds of things, that other directions that we need to go to make sure that we are competitive and that we are continue to be the institution that trains the majority of students of color to move into advanced degrees and careers in STEM disciplines. Are there any questions?
What happened?
I did get a chance to see the labs. They look great. So
there's a couple of things that still need to be done, but we're there.
When I went on my first visit throughout the campus, in my orientation, I visited the biology labs. I came back to the provost and Dean Lindsay, and I was actually depressed. I had not seen anything that bad in a long time.
And we had been depressed for quite some time.
And, you know, and I was quite honest. I said, how do we expect our students to learn in this? So what we did with, and I have to give a lot of credit to Dean Lindsay and the provost, they pulled together a team starting in about November, I think. And we planned to have it done between when school ended in May and over the summertime, to the credit of the faculty and to the credit of our of Chief Watson's staff. We were able to get those labs completed, two labs, and they are now
planning for the next renovation.
And our goal is to do a minimum of one lab a year, so that at the end of 4 years, we will have at least 4 to 8 labs. So we're going to try and do 1 to 2 labs a year. And this will then put us in a situation where when we go after the honor students from the various high schools, we can bring them to Chicago State, walk them in the lab, and, you know, and the wow factor is there. Our students are attracted to that wow factor. We have it. And it's now, we're now going to train our faculty how to use the labs, too.
Well, many of the faculty already know some of these best practices. They came here hoping to use best practices. A couple of the classes have started to phase into those labs this week. We are starting now to plan for the next renovation so that we can stay on target in terms of trying to have that project done when classes start the following year. But in addition to the advantages that Dr. Watson mentioned, the other advantage is that when we go for external funding, we are now able to say that the university is invested in STEM. The university has put its dollars where its mouth is relative to letting those funders know, potential funders know, that we are committed to making sure that our students are among the best trained. We have been taking advantage of the grants that we now have to increase the number of students who go on and pursue advanced degrees. As a matter of fact, we now have had the opportunity to try to recruit some of the students who had been here and are now getting PhDs. They decided they're, in one case, the wife said, no, we're staying here. But the bottom line is that these students have completed their doctoral training. So we have even hired the director of the pre-health program is a former biology major. So we are extremely invested in our students, and the commitment will put us in a better position to get more dollars to support our students.
And the way we were able to do this is that, and Glenn, please correct me, we used capital, no, we used appropriated dollars. We did not use capital dollars. We did not, so therefore we did not have to go through CDB?
We did not have to go through CDB. We used our own internal funding.
So that's why we were able to move so fast and not be limited by state procurement, that really slows the process down. So we reallocated dollars from within and built these two. And we plan on doing this every year until we get state-of-the-art labs in biology, chemistry, and physics.
And nursing.
That's right. And nursing. So next, thank you very much, Dean Lindsay. Appreciate it. Last thing that I would like to share is senior thesis. We are going forth with requiring a senior thesis of our freshmen that are coming in. That means that when they graduate, in order to graduate, they would have to write a senior thesis / research project, etc. And what that will mean is that they will have to show knowledge of a specific, subject area, in-depth knowledge of a specific subject area, and they will have to show that they have the ability to write and communicate that. All right? There are a number of universities throughout America that have a senior thesis. So this is something that will, as we are raising the standards in our biology and chemistry, this is raising the standards throughout the university in all areas, because we must ensure that our students can write. That's extremely important. We must ensure that they can demonstrate knowledge in a subject area. If you're getting a degree in a specific area, then you need to be able to demonstrate that. So that is something that is going forward. Madam Provost, is there something that, okay, is there anything you want to say? This is your area. I didn't miss anything? Okay, so it will not be effective until these freshmen become seniors. So we have 4 years to redesign our curricula, to set up writing labs or redesign our writing labs, to work out the logistics and et cetera to make this possible.
Yes.
But we now have a standard. We've reset our standard.
I'd just be curious, Madam Provost, just the feedback that you've received from the deans and some of the faculty on that issue. And then just to follow up, any feedback you receive from students on it.
It's really been an interesting process. And I don't want to overgeneralize. First of all, I have full support by all of the deans. And the process we used, it took us quite some time to agree upon what that policy should look like. The policy has been presented to Faculty Senate. I did not get, I won't say that I had opposition, but questions were raised. But the questions basically centered around, the additional support that's going to be needed, like the writing labs. So those were some of the concerns. And what I assured faculty, it's not like we have to implement it today. We have 4 years to really plan it so that we feel confident that when a student exits the portals of Chicago State University, that student is a master of the degree that they've just completed. And we have to have those types of assurances regarding our graduates. But all of the deans have signed off, literally signed off. And ironically, Dr. Watson and I, we met with many of the student leaders, and we were grappling with the terminology, because some individuals have gotten caught up in semantics, the use of the word senior thesis. And there were those that wanted to call it a senior project. Some wanted to call it a senior paper. We know in some fields, they may not have a senior project. They may just have a culminating project, especially if it's on the creative side. So we don't want to be in a position to define what it is, because it has to be relative to the particular discipline. But what we are saying, that once we've done that audit and we say that our students can get out there and compete, we want some assurances that we've done what we say that we're doing in preparing all of our graduates. So the students, they want it. Don't water it down. They wanted it to be a senior thesis, and they wanted us to raise the level, our standards. So Dr. Watson and I, we were really somewhat surprised by their enthusiasm as well as passion that they
That's right.
want this.
I mean, we were so impressed with the students, how the students stepped up on this one here. But I don't want to miss, I want to be clear with the board. I know the dean signed off. I know the students signed off. Did Faculty Senate sign off on this, vote on this, or what?
When I presented it to, we had a couple, some meetings prior to me meeting with Faculty Senate. We had a meeting with Dr. Watson and some of the senators. But really, it was the president, the vice president, and another member of Faculty Senate. And at that time, again, some concerns were voiced. And not necessarily that these were their opinions, but they were just sharing the opinion of some faculty members. And some of those opinions reflected statements such as this. Our students don't really have the capability of writing a senior thesis. That's not what we should be doing. We should be focusing on the lower level. So, you know, it's those type of statements that made us reflect on, you know, is this something that's shared by most faculty? And I would say it is not. We may have one or two or maybe several that may have this perception that our students don't have the capacity to step up to that challenge. We even had, when I visited Faculty Senate this last board, their last Faculty Senate meeting, I thought I was there to present, at which time I was told no, they would not take a vote. And I indicated to them that I accept and embrace all recommendations. It's not like I'm asking them to make a decision, but I wanted their feedback. What I was told was that they had planned to establish a subcommittee that would look at the whole notion of how our students are being prepared to write. And I will accept whatever those recommendations are. I will look at those recommendations because I see that that can only help us get to where we need to be in preparation for the success for students who complete the senior thesis. One of the areas that, one of the things that was shared at that Faculty Senate meeting, we're concerned that if a reporter shows up on campus and they ask the student for a sample of their senior thesis, that it will be an embarrassment for the university. So my response to that, if we start off with a negative that our students can't rise to the standard that we're trying to set, we are already defeated before we start. So, you know, I have embraced it. We will move forward with it. And I welcome the recommendations to make it even stronger. So I don't know when the committee is going to, I know he, Yan Searcy, who is the, Dr. Searcy, he's the president for Faculty Senate. He asked for volunteers. No one volunteered at that moment. But I'm sure that that subcommittee has been established, and I will wait for those recommendations.
But we are going forth with this senior thesis is now a policy at CSU.
Currently, it is a policy that is now posted on our webpage. I have signed off, you have signed off, and that's what it requires.
So it seems like the pushback you've received, the bit of pushback has been more around resources rather than...
I think it was around two things.
I mean, I'm hearing there's also some people that just don't necessarily feel strongly
semantics.
Enough about the student, but it seems to me as though if you have a degree in it, I think that's just what that's required.
But I also think, though, that for an organization whose brand has been so badly damaged over recent years, that the concerns that maybe the Faculty Senate raised are legitimate concerns about making sure that if somebody peeled the layers of the onion back, that we could withstand the scrutiny. So I think it's a wonderful idea, but I think that we should heed their concerns and try to figure out, and you mentioned that we don't have to do it today. We have 4 years to set it up. So in organizations,
and that's why we did it that way.
In organizations that are currently doing this, for instance, in your junior year, you're starting to focus on what that topic's going to be, and there may be work that needs to happen over the summer between your junior and senior year. So how do you support folks? What does that process look like so that we would be sure that by spring 2015, that we would have something that that everyone would be proud of, including the student?
You know, Trustee Morrison-Burley, you said where I was trying to get to that point was I would actually even solicit, you know, the concerns from the Faculty Senate. I mean, I would take them not so much as they should, you know, have more confidence. I would solicit it.
Yep.
Because you want to get all those issues out on the table.
Exactly.
So that, you know, in 4 years that everybody's prepared. And at that point, everything's been addressed. So there's really no excuse why a student wouldn't be able to do that. So that would be the way I would handle it from the Faculty Senate. If you still, you know, where you have pushback, I would solicit the pushback, you know, because you want to address any problems that there may be. So I think that's good. I think that the, you know, if everybody just signed on, I think that would be a concern to me. You know, the fact that you have some pushback, I think it's a pretty good thing, and I would listen to it and address it. So, but I think it's great. I'm glad. I think the leadership on that, President Watson's been great, because I think it should be required.
as a student, actually, I'm in agreement with it. I think it's a great idea, but I do have one concern or one thing that I would like to be taken into consideration. And my question is would graduation be solely on the completion of the thesis as an assignment, or would there be some minimal passing grade that they have to meet in order to graduate? And if that's the case, where do you determine, you know, this person has put in these years, they've made all their credits, does this one issue keep them from graduating, or what would be an action plan if in the event they have completed their matriculation according to the credit hours, but they might be deficient in what it takes to pass the senior thesis?
And all of that is going to be contingent on the program. The program is going to make the final determination. And just like you've raised that question, it's just like any other requirement that we have that is a university requirement. For example, with the foreign language, that is a university requirement that all students must demonstrate, what, 2 semesters of a foreign language. And it is based on passing, but with a minimum grade of letter grade of C. So with the thesis, a course is going to be identified as the course. That will be the final course, but there will be subsequent courses that will precede it that will help lead up to the final course where the thesis is, or the research project is actually, you know.
So when this is actually planned out as far as the strategies and everything, can it possibly be taken into consideration that the actual thesis is due maybe between 3 to 6 months in advance of graduation, just in the event that the student might need to do it over, they still have that time to present a quality piece of work and still graduate on time?
I accept that recommendation.
One is, all of that is a work in progress.
Absolutely.
You know, I think for any of us to sit here right now and say this is what it's going to be, I think we're speaking before we take it through the process. What we want to ensure that we have inclusion, that we have transparency, but with that we do set a standard. Now, it's like the doctoral thesis. You know, most people, when they go for the doctoral thesis, if they're working with their committee or they're working with the chair of their committee, by the time they get to that point, there are no surprises.
Right.
If our students and if our faculty are working close enough with our student, that student would not be surprised the senior year when it comes to, you know, what's happening with that paper. Because in a number of institutions, the student actually writes the first draft of that paper the junior year. Mm-hmm. And then by the time it gets to the senior year, that, you know, one clearly knows what the student's doing, the outline is there, and there should be no surprises. That's the way it's done at a number of universities. What we don't want to do is give a cookie-cutter approach to Chicago State. We want to give our faculty the latitude to help design it because we want ownership. But your concern is right on target. It's exactly what we need to take into account, but I don't have a specific answer. I like that to come as much as possible from the departments, from the faculty.
And I totally agree. Thank you. Also, part of my concern would be, because it would be the entire senior class opposed to a few graduate students here or there, my concern would be that the faculty isn't overloaded with all these different papers mm-hmm. to grade. Who would, you know, would there be a committee of people who, you know, are experts in whatever the department is, a group of people?
I don't want to speculate.
Yeah.
What that final project is going, it may not be a paper per se.
Okay.
Right.
But that's why, you know, we're gonna have this planning period, because I can't and will not dictate to the faculty, you know, what that needs to look like in terms of the entire process from the beginning to the end. But you know, we're gonna have students involved. We want your input.
I would love to be a part of that.
So I'm sure that faculty will be soliciting that type of feedback from the students as we get closer to the end.
And you know, but it is a standard, and as Trustee Butler said, we have got to deal with some reality, all right? There are some challenges to meet that standard. We have to work with our faculty. We have to ensure that the process has integrity. We have to make sure that it's realistic. And let me say, with regards to someone being overloaded, right now, the paradigm in education is going to change, all right? And all of that is going to be taken into consideration.
And the one thing, we did investigate what the other state institutions were doing. And I mean, I have to admit, I was somewhat surprised that out of all of them, I think there was only U of I. All of them required a senior thesis, but many of them required it only of their honor students. Some only required it in the College of Arts and Sciences to certain majors like philosophy, sociology. So each university had a prescribed population that required the senior thesis or senior, and they all did the same thing. They would say senior thesis / research project / so there were different qualifiers for what it meant. Some had creative works as a qualifier, so it depends a lot on the discipline. And I think that once we get past the semantics, not trying to define what it is, but let the discipline define what it should be, I think that we can move forward with our planning.
Although I guess I'm going to disagree a little bit, because I think writing is critical. And I would say no matter what your discipline is, mathematics, art, whatever, there needs to be a writing component. People need to be able to express themselves with a pen or a computer so that they're understood. So I would like to think that the thesis might, you know, combine art and, but narrative needs to be there. Narrative description, research description, that sort of thing. Because I think that's really critical.
We agree.
Okay.
We just don't have a lot.
Not just a pot, you know, but He's a writer.
Thanks, Madam Provost.
Perhaps, Mr. President, do you have any, is that?
No, ma'am, that's the last thing, I'm sorry.
Okay, great, no problem. The next are committee reports. The first is Academic and Student Affairs, which we had this morning. The focus was on some of the wonderful scholarship that the faculty are conducting, and we wish to congratulate all of them on the books and papers and presentations and whatever else it is that I'm forgetting, but there was some pretty remarkable grantsmanship that are going on here, and that really do set a model for the students and who get our faculty involved in things that then make them more expert in their fields, and presumably, we hope, better teachers as a result of that. We also talked about accreditation, and I think we've heard quite a bit about that today, so that's going to be a process that we will be hearing a lot more about for the next couple of years, and we took an important step yesterday, and we certainly look forward to learning more about that. The interesting thing is that this is also dovetailing with the strategic planning process, so this is really an opportunity for the university to figure out where we are and where we're going, and then how we're going to get there. So I think it's going to be a very exciting time. And then enrollment and retention, there were definitely some positive news on that front, and we're very glad to see that. And there was no action items came out of that meeting. The next committee is Finance and Audit. Trustee Scott.
Thank you. Before we get to the business, we just want to update the public that we had some presentation from Mr. Meeks on our significant budget issues that continue to visit the university, and word from the state that certain funds would not be forthcoming until the beginning of the year, which does leave us in a bit of a fiscal crisis that we're going to monitor very closely. We heard from our internal auditor about the external audit process and the internal audit work plan that has been signed by our president. Now we can move to the action items on our agenda. Mr. Meeks presented our budget. Mr. Meeks, could you just come forward for a second? The budget was presented at our August meeting and then re-presented here.
Yes.
And a resolution was presented and approved by the committee that should now be presented to the entire board. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, you can make a motion if you wish.
I make a motion that we approve the resolution that would adopt our operating budget for the next fiscal year.
Second.
Trustee Hill.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Rozier.
Yes.
Trustee Kerr.
Yes.
Trustee Morrison Butler.
Yes.
Trustee Samuels.
Yes.
I think that resolution is passed.
Thank you.
We had another resolution for a grant for student support services. That grant is designed to support projects for low-income students who are first-time college attendees and students with disabilities, both physical and learning challenges. We heard a fulsome discussion on that resolution. It's about a $300,000 grant. Do I hear a motion to approve that?
I move that we approve the Student Support Services grant.
Second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Morrison Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
The next action item was we had a presentation from our IT support, C. Cole Dillon, on a vendor who will provide Wi-Fi services both internal to the buildings and external that will ring our campus and, again, continue to bring our campus into the 21st century. I was happy to see that we had a lot of attention paid to that procurement process, and we have chosen the most responsible lowest and lowest bidder in that process. So if I could hear a motion to approve that resolution.
So moved.
Second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
Trustee Morrison Butler?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
Now, the last item on the agenda, it's a telephone maintenance.
No, we didn't do that.
That was an item that we had put on for notice because we assumed that based on our prior contracting, the amount would come in at a level that was required for board approval. When we opened the bids, we were pleasantly surprised to find that the bids came in under the amount for board approval, and we asked that that resolution be withdrawn.
Okay. All right, I think that's all of the action items for finance and audit.
Great. Facilities, Trustee Rozier?
Yes, thanks. We did have no action items. We got updates from Chief Watson and Mike Orr. Mainly the things we covered were works in progress, but moving, which is the good news. So the elevator projects, the emergency roof projects, particularly those in Douglas where pharmacy is, they are moving. We have dates. A lot of that will be accomplished this fall. Not on the schedule we liked, but they'll get there. The CTA bus turnaround looks great, almost finished. I think Mike said 99%. And the third item, which I thought was pretty important, was the emergency response, which Chief Watson talked about. It is in compliance. We just urged him to get it to his compliance, which I think is a little bit higher. No action items, that was it.
Thank you. Trustee Morrison Butler, Legislative and Personnel Committee.
No action items. We also received updates from Dr. Brooks Williams and Dr. Mitchell. From Dr. Brooks Williams, there was a during her update, a little bit of a discussion and just some general questions about the sequencing of discussions for the West Side campus, especially in lieu of challenges that we're having right now getting funds released from the state. And a reminder to the board that at least for now, those are completely separate pots of money, and you know it's really hard to try to bring one thing to bear on the other. So it's just one of the things that the board is kind of mindful of. The other discussion was because we actually misheard something, and so we thought we heard that there had been $11 million in funding, an appropriations bill that we had not gotten this year, but the fact of the matter was we've not gotten that money in the past, and what we were really trying to do was to put ourselves in line to receive those dollars, and that we had not been successful in being able to do that. That then led us to have a little bit of a discussion about whether or not the lobbyist that is our partner in that effort is the right person, and we look forward to kind of looking a little bit more deeply into that person and that firm so we can determine whether or not that's a relationship we would like to see continue in the future. Dr. Mitchell's update after that one was really brief. She was probably eager to be done with us after the protracted discussion about what we misheard. So she tried to hurry up and get out of the way. But a lot of her report was really about the updates of things that she had talked to us about in the past meeting. And so, for example, the implementation of People Admin, that's the first module, as everybody probably knows, of the electronic application process, updates on that and where we are, and good news about the organization essentially going or attempting to go paperless. So 90% of employees are receiving direct deposit right now, and we're just able to do things with less paper and obviously do things quicker. Those were the primary updates, no action items.
Thank you. Civil Service Merit Board, Father Tolliver is not here, so there is no report. The next item is the Foundation. Trustee Rozier?
Yes, thank you. Foundation had its annual awards gala last Thursday, and my instruction to the Foundation when I meet with them is only one, and that's to raise money. So I was pretty excited that the room was about 400 deep, I believe. President Watson gave an incredible presentation that I wanted to note focused a lot on the students and the improvements that have been made at the university. I thought they were timely. I thought it was in front of the right crowd and well delivered, so thanks for that. We had a lot of the leadership there, Dr. Lindsay, Meeks, amongst others, so I wanted to thank everybody for that as well. We don't have final numbers. Of course, that's what I want to know, how much we raised. We don't have final numbers just yet. However, it was above what was expected, so we're pretty excited about that. And that is the largest revenue generator of the foundation, so that event is very important to the foundation, which, of course, is important to the university. So that's all I had to report, and I had nothing formal from the foundation.
Thank you. Student trustee, D. Kerr.
Overall, in regards to the UPass, there have been nothing but positive comments and an overall excitement, sense of content and financial relief amongst a lot of the students who take public transportation. It's also extremely beneficial that we now have CTA coming back into the school. This has reduced a substantial amount of travel time for a lot of our commuting students who have to walk as well, especially with the cold months coming. The Jones Convocation Center, this is the first time it's pretty much been a one-stop shop for students' needs, registration, financial aid, parking, meal plans, UPass, et cetera. And it has not made it easier. It's not only made it easier on students, but parents as well, as far as getting all the bases covered for registering students each semester. Also, I really would like to commend the faculty that have been working, because they have been working with such a sense of urgency in helping students and making sure they had everything they needed starting with the semester. And a lot of students commented on the lines not being as long, the service moving faster, and everything being in the place that they needed when they needed. So far, students seem to be becoming very acclimated to Moodle. At first, there was an issue with password resets, but I believe that's been resolved. Also, the CSU bookstore, we have good news. The bookstore has now made it accessible so that students have the option to rent some of their textbooks opposed to just buying them. This has made it easier for students who have to buy books out of pocket. They can now rent them, and it is less of a financial strain for people who do have to pay, who don't exactly have financial aid, or all of their financial aid doesn't cover their books. So we're very pleased about the rental program. One suggestion was made by a student: if professors would consider putting at least one of their books on reserve in the library, so in that time frame when they're waiting for those refund checks to purchase their books, because some students have to wait until they get that money to buy their books, they can still keep up with classes. But other than that, the bookstore has really stepped it up as far as service. Also, they got rid of this bag system that they had last year, which was a fiasco, and made it so that students can go in and out. There were times where the lines were long, but it was 10 times better than the previous year. No actions.
My recollection is that last year a policy was instituted whereby textbooks were placed on reserve so that students could access them. Is that continued, or has that been discontinued? Okay, so there are textbooks on reserve.
There are textbooks on reserve, but the suggestion is that if every teacher who requires a book could at least put one textbook on reserve, because not all teachers do it.
Oh, okay.
So what that would do is that would increase the number of textbooks that are on reserve. Even though we have put textbooks on reserve, we never have enough. So what our student trustee is recommending, if our faculty, if each one were to take one of their books and just put it on reserve, it would just increase it even more.
Oh, okay.
So it enhances what we
well,
have.
Well, that's certainly, okay, that makes sense. Seems like that would help. Thank you very much. The next item on our agenda is our executive session. Would somebody make a motion to take us into executive session for our employment matters?
I move that we go into executive session.
Second.
To discuss employment matters, legal matters, and collective bargaining matters.
That's what you said.
Yes, okay. That's what I thought.
Second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Kerr?
Yes.
I don't know what it
Trustee
is.
Trustee Morrison Butler?
Let me say those things. So.
Well, it goes on record.
Yes. So it goes there,
Trustee
right.
Samuels.
So
yes.
If there's any question about what we run in my mouth, that we've got. On their agenda today is public and employee comments, so I would certainly welcome anybody who has a comment to step forward. Please identify yourself.
Nobody.
Wow. Yeah.
For the record, my name is Philip Beverly, Associate Professor, History, Philosophy, Political Science. I think most of the trustees are pretty familiar with my format. I've got 3 points. Nail those pretty quickly. First one is around iPads. And one of the, I think, advantages of being faculty is not having to delve into administrative minutia and rules and having to know stuff and just being able to ask questions. And so the question has come up recently about were iPads purchased with appropriated funds or not? And if so, does that make them fall under the administrative rules of property control? And if so, can state funds be used to buy property that's given away to students? And for me, there's an accountability issue there because I know the computer in my office has a property control tag on it, as does the monitor, the printer, all that, and that I'm responsible for that until I do a property transfer change order and all that. And the larger concern, given that context, is if we have somehow inadvertently, with the best of intentions to support our students, violated some administrative rules, is that going to lead to an audit finding down the road that we could have avoided? And so if that's been asked and answered, great for us. If not, I'd invite us to take a look at it. I've just... I'm going to finish my comments if you don't mind. I've got other comments.
Okay.
Thank you. Dr. Watson, thank you for your leadership around the FEMA Disaster Recovery Center. We have FEMA Department of Homeland Security on campus using part of the Convocation Center. We are the only FEMA site on the south side servicing citizens who were disadvantaged by the floods. A couple months ago, we had disaster declarations under Stafford, and money has been available, and I'm still delusional enough to believe that there'll be a press conference here, that the president and the Region 5 administrator and others will be standing in front of that building, going out to about 1 million people in this city, showing Chicago State, with some good B-roll of our campus and our students, and that is something we don't have the money to pay for in terms of advertising. So I hold out hope that will be seeing us on TV, and given what Trustee Morrison Butler spoke of earlier, damage to the brand, my military experience tells me if you're a soft target, you better harden the target. And we've been pounded enough, and now it's time for us to harden up. And so that's one way that that might happen. Along the lines of emergency management that I will continue to bang on about, I was just at the IEMA conference, the Illinois Emergency Management Agency conference, at the beginning of the month, and there was a very interesting panel on higher ed and some of the developments in higher ed. And it's sort of the stepsister in the emergency management world because we just sort of float out there, especially state universities. What we've discovered when they were making the administrative rules for the Campus Security Act that got passed after the Northern shooting was that there's nobody at the state level who's in charge of enforcement. And so if we're out of compliance, we're just out of compliance because there's nobody who can enforce that. And yet if something happens and we didn't comply, we're still going to be liable and subject to, depending on obviously the nature of the incident, potentially substantial punitive damages. And so the suggestion was that universities get compliant, follow Campus Security Act, and obviously follow Clery Act provisions as required, just to mitigate against liability. Also suggested, I just completed the All Hazards Incident Commander course through IFSI, Fire Service Institute, and one of the instructors was from the DeKalb Fire Department, who worked the Northern shooting a couple of years ago and is very familiar with emergency management at universities. And we need an IMT at the university. We need a Type 5 IMT at the university. And it's not hard to do. I'm glad we've got somebody else now on board who's qualified to do ICS 300 and 400. And there's other stuff that we need to have happen. I would love to see board members be in our TV studio going through the 77 questions when the media is swarming you in the event of something happening and you knowing how to respond. given whatever the protocols that the university establishes are. Third item, I'd call it a green agenda. And there are three things there that came to mind I've been thinking about. One is biodiesel for our fleet vehicles that is created, if you will, from cooking oil from restaurants, say, within a mile radius of the university. They pay money to have a company come in and dispose of their oil. We could turn that oil into biodiesel at 75 cents a gallon, I believe, is the latest price on that, and have some community outreach and be more of an active partner in the community. The other is a farming plot. We've got enough space here to do a 50 by 50 sort of urban farm and composting site. We have food services that's here, and us creating our own compost would be an interesting thing. And then the third thing is electronic recycling. It is amazing to me going over to property control to turn stuff in, computers and that, and it's just stuff that's stacked up that's going to go sit in a warehouse. And it seems like we should be able to recycle that better. And I know that that's state procurement and property control rules and all that. Maybe we should be the ones who set the standard for state institutions. Now, the reason I bring that up in such specificity is I think that that's an idea related to vision. And I would hope that the Board of Trustees creates, generates, co-creates their vision for our institution. And I believe that that will give some constituencies, I've heard this from several faculty, well, what does the board want? And there seems to be a sort of disconnect between some faculty and the board. What does the board want? Where do they see us going? What do they see us being 5 years from now, 10 years from now? And if there's some statement from you, and I know you've got Open Meetings Act sort of restrictions on how you meet, if you could do something to give some clue about where you see us going, I think people would be much much more enthusiastic about jumping on board with our strategic planning. There's, I think, a level of skepticism at the university because I've been here 19 years. So I've seen strategic planning process after process after process. What's come to fruition with that? And why is this going to be different? And in the face that there's no evidence that it's going to be different, skepticism emerges. Thank you very much.
I think that there are probably answers and additional information ready to hand on a number of the points that Dr. Beverly just raised. And I think if we could address a few of them quickly, we probably would be helpful and give you some immediate feedback. Ms. Cole, do you want to?
Thank you, Trustee Hill. We did extensive analysis on what the requirements are for property tagging. The devices that we purchased on behalf of the students are considered consumables under the State Property Act and are not required to be tagged. With respect to the electronic waste, that is completely governed by state law. Anything that is tagged must, by state law, be returned to state property control. The university has no right to dispose of that outside of the guidelines that we have been given by the state and would be given an audit finding if we did so. The last thing that I would like to address is with respect to technology and the devices that get used. We are at a time of technology transition. And I would encourage everyone not to look backwards with respect to what they think technology is all about, but to look forward. Technology in the future is all about mobile devices and in the clouds. And so the kind of electronic waste that has been generated in the past is rapidly going to go down. And the business models that were created about recycling that kind of computer technology are no longer going to be viable, and I expect that to come to fruition within 2 to 3 years. So I would not recommend for the university to put any kind of investment in a recycling program because it is my belief that that kind of effort would be wasteful of the university's resources just because of the direction of technology in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody wish to make any more comment about emergency management and compliance with the state security, whatever it's called? Not very good, was it?
Good afternoon. Professor Beverly has taken a lengthy number of courses in NIMS and ICS, much more than what's required currently by Homeland Security. The only requirement for us at this point is 300 and 400. The position that he's talking about is a much upper level position. He's over at the fire service taking positions. That's something right now that we're not required to have. If he can make me understand what the need is for this position he's identified, we'd be glad to take a look at it to see where does it fall into our university. As it falls with FEMA, FEMA is there in our JCC. They'll be there through almost the end of next month. When FEMA went into that building, they issued their own press release relative to them being on Chicago State's property, that we're the South Side location, and everyone knows about it. It's very well signed. We're glad to have them here on our campus, and we'll work with them any kind of way we can.
Is there anything you wanted to say about compliance with the...
We are currently in compliance with everything that we're supposed to do. Our compliance goes through, we're required to work with the Chicago Office of Emergency Management. They have already given us the thing that we have met and exceed the compliance standards that they wish for. Thank you.
Is there any comment on the green agenda? On the specifics, there was a discussion of biodiesel, urban farms, and Cecil Dillon has already commented on the electronics recycling. Any more feedback on that? I'm sure there'll be an additional consideration. I also want to really recognize your comments about vision and plan, because I think those are very well taken. We had some discussion this morning during the Academic Affairs Committee, especially about the accreditation process and the simultaneous strategic plan. We continue to have emphasis on figuring out how the board is going to engage in the strategic plan. I certainly, and this is a personal comment, if any of the other members of the board wish to say something about this, I would certainly welcome it. But my description of our characterization of the previous plan is that I didn't think it had anything strategic in it, and that there was a very different approach needed. So I think that there's a process going on, which I know is going to involve the community at large in terms of